My name is Jerry, and this is the Wild Eye Podcast. The Odzala Experience. Hey, everybody. So I'm recording this from the deck at Sabi Sabi in South Africa, and it is remarkably wet in this place. With the rains over the last few weeks here, it's a different world. So I'm just here for a very quick visit and then back to Johannesburg end of the weekend. But we're not going to talk about Sabi Sabi in this one. Now, Odzala is a vast rainforest national park in the Republic of Congo with some of the world's most critically endangered wildlife, including things like forest elephants, gorillas, pangolins, and in some instances, a species most people never encounter anywhere else. In this podcast episode, Andrew interviews his two guys there, Dylan and Pedro. Now, they come from completely different worlds. Dylan worked his way through South Africa's top reserves before chasing something wilder, and Pedro left a luxury retail job in Brussels after one safari experience, retrained as a guide, and basically rebuilt his entire life around Africa. They have a chat about what makes Odzala genuinely special. Now, it's wild. You have to work for sightings, and there's always something new, as well as the rare species living there and how to place fundamentally changes how you see nature. I hope you guys enjoy this one.
All right, so I'm sitting here on the banks of the Lekeni River in Odzala Kakua National Park with two amazing guides who've hosted us so far across 9 days. We've still got one day, although I suppose an afternoon activity, and then we depart. Dylan Smith and Pedro Lopez with an S.
Exactly, very important.
Very important. How's it going, guys?
Yeah, very, very good. It's hard to not have a good day in Odzala.
I love it. You work for everything out here, but it certainly gives what you put in, right?
Absolutely. It is a very, very special place. There's always a surprise around the corner, and you feel the magic of this place. It is very unique.
Yeah. How did you guys get here? Dylan, let's maybe start with you. When we first met, we chatted a little bit and went all the way back to Madikwe days and found some connections there. And then you went on to Tswalu, which probably you thought that was quite wild and remote. And
oh, geez.
Something new.
I started my career years and years ago, actually in the Eastern Cape. First, I was working in the Kruger National Park just with my government qualifications and everything like that. I couldn't afford a FAGASA diploma yet. And then I moved into a FAGASA training academy and then into the Eastern Cape around places like Shamwari, Amakala, Sibuya, then moved up towards Madikwe Game Reserve, spent a good few years in Madikwe, moving around from Tau to Nkuru to Kukama to Matea Safari Lodge, from there off to the Sabi Sands, and that's where I went into Leopard Hills for a while. Beautiful place, beautiful lodge, but you know, it's one thing that's been consistent through my whole career was just looking for bigger and bigger and bigger and more and more and more. You know, it's, you go into these places where, yeah, it's an incredible place. Every game reserve, every national park, they have, it's like a bowl of fruit, you know, everything has its own item to it that you want to pick out from that. And for me, it was just going like more, you know, when I could start recognizing all the elephants, you start going like, okay, it's not it's not true, you know, it's not the real thing, you know, and you get bigger and bigger. Eventually ended up in the largest national game reserve in South Africa, which is Tswalu Kalahari Reserve, and incredible place, you know, and it's to the point that the animals are semi-unhabituated there because they see so few vehicles or just in general human traffic, which is amazing. But in my time, I've also done small stints in like Botswana, I've done small stints in Zambia, Zimbabwe. So I've taken people out, and especially like places like Namibia. So I've always known that there's access to more as well. And there are bigger places. There are more wild places out there. And I got the opportunity to come out here. I was sitting at the beautiful restaurant Klenyan in Tswalu the one night. And the previous head guide who used to work here, Josh Duffus, he called me. He said, "Dull, I've got an opportunity in the middle of the Congo." And I said, "Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I'm definitely keen for that." And it's, yeah, it's opened up a whole new world for me. It's changed how I see Africa, to be honest. It's an amazing, amazing place. Really,
very
truly.
So. Yeah. And Pedro, like, your story is also, I mean, completely opposite. And so Dill, obviously from South Africa. Tell us a little bit about where you're from, how you got here.
So my story is a little bit unusual. I never thought I'd become a nature guide ever, not in, even in my deepest dreams. So I was born and raised in Belgium to a Portuguese family, worked in a luxury retail in the fancy streets of Brussels up until I was around 25, 26 years old, and then I moved to Africa as a guest to Zambia, South Virunga National Park. So that was my first introduction to Africa, and that's when it all changed. My only, let's put it that way, relationship with Africa was through the big screen. After work, you just kind of escape watching documentaries. And then, yeah, and then I went to my first safari and I could smell things, see things, feel things in a way that I would have never imagined. And somehow I went back home and there was something in my mind and I was like, okay, I need to go back there. But because I was already a little bit older, I had to find a job, and I didn't really have any like qualification or anything that would allow me to travel to Africa to work there. So did a bit of research and came across EcoTraining, which is one of the South African schools that provide courses for people to become safari guides. And yeah, I left my whole life, or my old life behind, my job, my friends, this time my ex-girlfriend, family, all of that, all my money as well, because it's not that cheap, but it was the best decision of my life. So yeah, moved to South Africa, did a 1 year course, and then from there, as an international, it's quite difficult to find a job in South Africa. So I heard of a place in the Central African Republic, Sanga Lodge in Zanga Sanga Special Reserve, and I was like, okay, let's try something a little bit uncommon.
Did you have any idea what you were getting into?
I had no idea at all, but it was still Africa. Yeah. It was an opportunity to potentially put something on my CV and maybe like continue my career. And then, yeah, I spent almost a year there. Actually, most of COVID I spent there, or part of COVID. Had the most incredible experiences in the forest, and that's where I fell in love with the forest. And then, towards the end of COVID, I heard that Odzala, at the time Congo Conservation Company, now Kamba, was looking for guides. And I didn't blink twice, and I just took the opportunity, and yeah, I've been here since 2021, and it's been an amazing journey in such a special place.
Yeah, I mean, it really is a special place. And if we start to just unpack what makes Odzala so special, I remember coming here for the first time and just feeling like I discovered, you know, often feel like I was born 100 years too late, like everything had been charted and yeah, kind of discovered. And this place was just wild. And you know, from a guide's perspective, having traveled the way that you guys have, you know, what is it that you think makes Odzala so unique?
It's a good question, eh? I feel that way a lot as well, you know, where it's, you look at like old footage or photos of like those big herds of like 400 or 500 elephant, you know, it's almost you sometimes as a guide, you feel like you've gone past the golden age of safari. And honestly, as a guide, for me, what stands out here is besides the freedom, it's also the unknown. It's the fact that you don't actually know what you're going out to get every single day. You know, you can't just sit and be like, okay, well, let's just go and track that leopard, and you can specifically name the leopard you're going to go and track. Or you go out and go, okay, well, today we're going to sit with this for a couple of hours. Today we're going to go sit with that. It's, you just go out into Odzala and you just experience every single day, every single hour out here. And Odzala, whatever it presents to you, that's what you work with. And it's just the idea that it's actually a true wilderness area. It's just a true experience that you're coming here to be involved with, you know. And it's a place that completely envelops you into it as well. You know, it doesn't, there's no half measures here. You know, as a guide or even as a guest, when you're coming here, you're totally immersed in what this place is and what it is going to give you or not give you. Yeah. And you don't really have the option of that. It's just coming here and just like I said, being in the middle of it. And I think that is something, yeah, and embracing it, absolutely. It's something you don't really get anywhere else.
I think rainforest, just the habitat as well, and the savannas, because it's not just rainforest, which is another big, you know, interesting fact here. But it is so different to safari anywhere else in Africa. Pedro, from a guide's perspective, like obviously that has been such a great experience for me and for the guests. You know, in a world where we're seeing over tourism, not just on safari, but in Barcelona and in Australia and all these different countries, that people are having an impact, make no mistake. To come into a space where we haven't seen another guest apart from a transfer, where we haven't had the crackle of the radio for sightings, which number one means that you guys have had to find them. Number two, I wanted to make a little joke, and it came up in conversation, but to, you know, say to the guests, all right, guys, we've had a nice time with these forest buffalo, now that another group wants to come in, so we need to leave. That's not how it works out here. Like, it's tough guiding, but rewarding at the same time.
Oh no, absolutely rewarding. I mean, it's a little bit like Dylan was saying, you know, out here, it's whatever nature, whatever the forest has to offer, you make the most out of it. And it teaches you also to be patient, you know.
This morning's sighting is a great example.
Absolutely. This morning was unbelievable. And both of us, Dylan and I, have seen a lot of forest elephants. We're very fortunate. But this morning was magical. Just right time, right place. A little bit of patience. We never know what can happen, because we saw that elephant kind of going back into the bush. But, you know, let's just hang around there and see what happens. Next thing we've got.
Just for context, we saw one elephant initially, and we saw the arse end of it disappear into the bush. And what? 10 minutes later?
10, 15. There's the whole family unit of six just crossing and that stream with the mist and the big trees. And I mean, it was unreal. Mm. That's one of the things that make this place very, very special. Again, another thing that also Dylan mentioned is the freedom of exploring, the freedom of going wherever we want to go, you know? Yeah. Also to places with very limited access. Andrew, you just said that a lot of places, there's a lot of people, it's very commercial, etc. Out here, maybe you won't see as many animals, but the ones you see, it's a luxury, you know? And the remoteness makes it a luxury, that more and more people are actually looking for that remoteness. And that remoteness becomes luxury in itself, and it's unbelievable. It's extremely special.
I think part of the ability to explore wherever you want, and you know, to contextualize that in most other places that means going off-road. I don't think we've taken many photographs, if any, from the vehicle. Everything has been on foot or on boat, and that's why you're able to do that, which in itself is quite a unique experience. Like, going back to that immersion is very, very cool. But you guys have literally had to work and find every sighting all the way. Like, so maybe we can start now to move into the three camps and the different experiences that we've had over the last 9 nights. We're still one more to go. But the gorilla trekking out of Ngaga, we literally had to go and find them. We didn't link up with trackers. And you guys were saying this is the only place in Africa where you're going out to literally find those gorillas. It's not a given. You don't walk in and link up with a tracker.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a genuine gorilla track. Like, you're going out every single day. The trackers, what they do is they go out the afternoon before you arrive and they find where the gorillas go and nest. Western lowland gorillas have a behavior style that's actually a lot more akin to something like chimpanzees. These chimpanzees are constantly mobile or walking around looking for food. Because Western lowland gorillas are the smallest of the gorillas next to crossover, they generally are much more mobile. They're able to climb up trees. They're able to move at least up to about 4 kilometers a day looking for food sources. So when you go out, you go to where the point that the tracker left them, where they were nesting, and then you start working from there. And it's a lot of listening, it's watching, it's just trying to pretty much gauge exactly where they've gone and where they're going to be. And a lot of it is, and pretty much even with our jobs, a lot of what the trackers do and what we do is anticipating animals out here and anticipating those movements. So to go out on these gorilla treks, it's why we keep it small groups, 4 guests maximum, the guide and your tracker. So trackers show where they go out and they pretty much seek where the gorillas have gone to, and they're the ones who go out and actually guide you to the gorillas. Whereas we're just there really as a backup in those contexts. And I think it's also one of the only times where we kind of just take a back seat and watch the amazing stuff that they do. It's, you know, Magdalena Momejo is pretty much one of the be all end all words on gorillas in regards to gorilla behavioral sciences. She even commented that she thinks our trackers potentially are some of the best in Central Africa, because everything that they do and the way that they work with guests constantly and going out with, I think, a little bit of pressure on how they go and find the gorillas, because obviously they want to take out the guests with, you know, the intent of finding. Yeah, there's no guarantee, but they want to try and guarantee this. But yeah, they go out on a gorilla trek every single morning to go out and truly find. So every time you find them is the initial moment of discovery every single time you see those gorillas. Yeah. And that's quite remarkable.
And also rooted in conservation and science rather than just pure commercial tourism. So as you said, small groups. We take 5 guests on this trip because you can't have more than 4 in a trek. So we split them 3 and 2. And then I bounce around there. And that in itself is quite unique. Thinking back to our treks, and I don't know, you guys had a lot of first experiences on that, and you keep saying it, but let's get it on record. What was your highlight, your personal highlights from the 4 treks that we did on this trip?
Very easy one.
Yeah.
For me, it was that silverback that has joined Neptuno's family. So Neptuno's is the name of one of the habituated families that we track, and there's another silverback that has joined, and he's accepted his presence, and he's been with him for just over a year, and so we know he's around, but we never see him or very, very rarely. And the other day, I think it was our 3rd trek, we're just watching the whole family feeding up in trees, waiting for them to climb down, and next moment we hear a bit of a rustle close to us in the thick understory, and we just look through the vegetation and we see that bright red head staring down at us. And then I look at the tracker, Zephyrin, and ask him, is that the non-habituated male? Says, yeah, yeah. And I mean, he's been tracking for over 30 years now, and I could see his eyes shining. Like, this is a first, like that. Now he's getting habituated to us. So he sat with us for a good 20 minutes. Guests could take amazing footage that actually even the researchers and the trackers asked for those pictures, because it's the first pictures. And this was unbelievable. As much as I love watching gorillas, I mean, I've been watching those for a while, and they're habituated. Again, I need to specify that when we say habituated, it's not domesticated, just tolerate our presence. But having that one, be curious, and the beautiful huge silverback just watching us, and kind of at some stage you didn't even know who's observing who, you know, it's that whole interaction, and it was unbelievable, and I'm looking forward for the pictures.
Yeah,
that was very, very special.
That's awesome. And Dylan, for you, something, a standout moment from our gorilla trekking?
So it would also be that silverback. Honestly, I think it's also watching the interactions, especially on the last trek. Actually, you know what my favorite moment was? There was that first trek we did, and it was that first gorilla you guys saw. Exactly, and he just appeared in that little channel of Marintesi on the little tracker path there, and it was like this perfect ray of light going onto his face. And for me, as I said to you guys, we do our gorilla briefing before, obviously, the night before. So you arrive at Ngaga, you kind of go through this gorilla briefing, what to expect, all the rules, how we've pretty much evolved as a lodge and as a conservation effort towards the Western Lowland gorillas. And we always suggest, which is also something I believe that is quite unique. I haven't been on other gorilla treks, but I believe it's unique to our gorilla treks, is we encourage you to look in their eyes. And that was that moment. It was the first moment of contact and just making full eye contact with a Western Lowland gorilla. Yeah. You know, and getting the images that you guys got, which were spectacular, you know, just of this perfect lit set of eyes in the middle of this dark forest so early in the morning. You know, it was that, I gotta say, actually was my highlight, watching how excited all you guys got for that was. And it's always, you know, the guides always feed off of guests' excitement and your happiness and everything like that, because we know how special it is. So the fact that you guys react to it is always massive for us. I got to say, I think that was my highlight, yeah. that first gorilla.
That was a very special moment. And, you know, so we've done a 10-night adventure here. So we landed in Brazzaville and we've flown up 2 hours by plane, landed here, and we drove straight into Ngaga camp, which, again, another unique thing is outside of the protected area in the national park. And the forest itself is protected, but some of our treks, Pedro, were outside of that in, you know, not protected land. And we spent 4 nights there, which gave us 4 gorilla treks, which was really cool. I think the guests all enjoyed that. And then we came back to Mboko, where we are now, but we spent 1 night here. And so I'm going to leave the river and that side of things. But the following morning, we went out, and that afternoon we kayaked down the Lakoli River and did a walk into Lango Bay. So, and that, you know, is where we spent two nights on a camp overlooking the bay, just the most insane location. Pedro, just maybe explain a little bit about the bay, the activities that we did there, and then land on a highlight for you out of those 2 nights and mm-hmm. activities.
Well, before anything else, the transfer from Mboko to Lango, it's one of the most special transfers one can ever do out here in Africa. I mean, literally, you get onto a remote river in the middle of nowhere, there's no one on that river, and you're silently cruising down that river. All the sounds and the colors and the trees overhanging the river, and at every corner you can find something. So that
we did see elephants from our kayak transfer down as well.
We did, yeah, we did. And then once we get to the mouth of Lango Stream, actually, for the record, we had a huge rain the night before, so it made things a little bit more complicated than usual, because the current was very, very strong. So yeah, no, well done for the whole team to have been able to walk, I don't know, maybe 1.5K upstream on with a very strong current to the lodge. That's quite unusual, but it gave a little bit of an adventurous side, and did very well. But yeah, once you get to Dubai, I mean, the bay, which is a natural clearing in the forest with a constant source of water where animals gather to come and get the minerals, mostly elephants and then other animals as well, such as African green pigeons, forest buffalo, sitatunga, harnessed bushbuck, etc. I don't know. I mean, to give an idea, there's 420 bays over or bigger than 1 hectare in the whole park. I mean, the whole park is 13,600 square kilometers, you know. And we are able, I mean, this Lango Bay or Lango Lodge is the only lodge in Africa or in the world in this case, built on a bay. So this is just a glimpse of what happens in all the other bays in the region, you know. We usually say that a bay is where animals kind of show themselves, and you can actually have the privilege to just have a glimpse of into their secret lives, because once they're into that curtain of green of the forest, you don't know unless you set up camera traps or anything like that, or if you encounter an animal in the forest, they either move away very quickly, or then you're very silent and very lucky to just see a little bit of behavior, you know, because there's at least for me there's a difference between having a sighting and then having an experience with an animal, either it's in the bay or in the forest. And the bay allows you, gives more chances for you to actually have more experiences with those secretive animals. So overall, that for me is quite unique and very special. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think I always enjoy those deep water patches that we walk through. And I think for a lot of guests, you know, I always chat to guests before bringing them out here. And, you know, one of the things that I say is you've got to be comfortable being a little uncomfortable. And it does feel weird at first, you know, getting your shoes and socks wet or putting those wet shoes and socks on the next morning. But once you're in that water, there's something quite special about that. And I think the deep water patches are the best. Maybe just describe what that's like and why it's so silent moving through that water.
Oh, I mean, Lango is a prime example of how Odzala really immerses you into it. Because, you know, the thing is like within Gaga, we're walking through the trackers' paths that the trackers have created in order to best find gorillas around the concession that Ngaga is located. Lango, we're walking where the elephants walk. So where we go, where we walk, has been shaped by the forest and its existence, you know, with all that entails, with either the weathering, with the elephants, with the other animals, with, you know, with the water movement. Every step we take is basically in the footpath of nature.
Yeah.
And that's probably, you know, it's difficult to say, but most of the guide's favorite camp is Lango, because it's the start of where guests start to really connect and be like, what are we actually like doing? This is insane. yeah. But it's, you know, it's where people start, the light bulb kicks in, and people, you know, when you're standing for the first time in that bay, whether it be on the transfer or in the first morning, and the parrots are flying overhead and the thousands of African green pigeons are flying, and you know, you have your feet sitting in the water and your guides are about to give the briefing, it's often a moment that you can watch your guests, that light bulb goes off and be like, oh my god, this is incredible, you know. And we always try to give our briefings, but we try our best not to reveal too much with our walks, especially with the walk that we do call the deep water patches. And essentially what that is that it's two what we call boulevards. So it's pathways that are created by the elephants, but it's not just like a game path. It's these highways created by elephants that cross through the entire Congo Basin, through the entire forest. That is the way that the elephants travel and traverse, or herds of elephants traverse through the forest, either be from getting from the savannah through the swamp forest into the bays, into the forest, into the savannas, or wherever it may go. But these pathways have been carved over thousands and thousands of years, and these two in particular run parallel to each other. They carve through a swamp forest. And swamp forests, when I say, you know, swamp, I mean these places, outside of having these two boulevards, you would be up to at least your hips in impassable mud. It's like a impenetrable wall created by nature, you know. And it's these basically these sinks of water that just sit in the throughout the year around the forest. And the elephants, maybe however old these pathways are, one elephant found a way to get through this. The next elephant followed, and the next elephant followed and followed and followed and followed, and to the point that we can literally walk hip deep through the water that is just seeping out of the swamp forests and these perfectly carved quartzite paths that the elephants have created. It is probably one of, if not the most unique walk I've ever done in my entire time of guiding, you know. And that's from 2011 to now. It's a lot of walking, and honestly, this is, you know, one of the most special things, because of course it's the only walk where you don't hear your feet or any feet. When you get into it, it's that initial rush of the bit of the water as your feet start to get into the water, and you're getting deeper and deeper, and eventually you're at about your hip height, and the only thing that you can hear around you is the occasional movement of water and then the forest. You can hear the monkeys, you can hear the birds, you can hear nature in its most pure form while you're just walking through it. And it is enough that I've had guests brought to absolute emotion of crying, because it is remarkably, remarkably special.
And it's so interesting, you know, I mean, we had great sightings of forest elephant, forest buffalo, harness bush buck, all of those things, and here we are talking about a walk through some water, which is a highlight, and I think the guests will all share that. However, we did have an amazing on-foot encounter with two, actually, encounters, that one that last morning with elephants, which was really, really special. And so, like, chapter three of this whole thing, and again, the really special part about this is you come into this landscape and you can move across the landscape, just sampling a little bit of each of the camps and different experiences and all of them. And now we're back at Mboko, where obviously the focus is on the boating down the river, and from a photography perspective, focusing on, you know, some of the monkey species that are around and forest elephants. It's just been amazing, but also different things. Like, we're about to, when we wrap this up, jump into the Lekeni River here for a bit of a swim and a dip. We set up a camera trail, a trail cam, along a boulevard. Really excited to see what we get on that. But boating along this river system, yes, it's the same stretch, but it's one of the most productive stretches imaginable. Some of the things that we see and experience, Pedro, and maybe just, you know, again, you've referenced this morning's sighting, but this river really does provide a an opportunity to see even more of the forest.
Yeah, so to give a little bit of context to whoever's or will be listening to this podcast, one of the things that make Odzala so unique is the southern side where we are, the Mboko Lango areas. It's typically what we call a forest savanna mosaic. So it's patches of forests surrounded by savannas, and so the diversity of the habitats is huge. And that stretch of river, of the Lekoli River, actually part of it crosses this savanna mosaic, forest savanna mosaic area. And there are a few openings. A typical river in the rainforest is unbelievable. It's just huge curtains of trees that you just navigate through and can see the occasional monkey, or maybe if you're extremely fortunate, an elephant crossing, etc. But it's much more difficult to actually observe wildlife. Whereas in this specific spot, there's a few bys, so a few clearings, where, again, it gives us little glimpses of the lives of these animals. And another thing I'd like to mention about the boating activity is actually the way we operate. Guides here. A little thing, every time there's a new guide coming in, the first time they go into the onto the boat, they'll see the one guy jump in the water and start pulling the boat. So we're literally like sometimes chest deep in the water, pulling the boat, maneuvering the boat, and then they look at us and like, are you guys crazy? No, what about the crocs and the hippos and this and that? I'm like, yeah, we are. I mean, there are a few.
We are crazy? Okay, there are a few. Yeah.
But I don't know, we connect to that river so much, and we understand the animal behavior so much that we feel extremely comfortable. Something people should know as well is that we don't get Nile crocodiles. So there's no lurking crocodiles always looking for us. So that obviously helps, which allow us to actually jump in the water after we switch off the engine and then pull the boat and approach animals that otherwise you'd never be able to approach so close, or to have that experience, not only a sighting, but an amazing experience with those animals. And as a guide, it's that sense of adventure, that sense of connecting with nature, of, you know, when Mother Nature kind of gives you like a puzzle, and now you're brainstorming, how am I going to use the water level, the sandbanks, the trees, the branches, anticipating animal movement, behavior, and to position that boat in a way.
Trying to stay silent as well.
Exactly, and to try and provide the best animal sighting or even, again, experience, you know, and that is something that personally I enjoy very, very, very much. You feel alive, and like you say, we've done this stretch, I don't know, since I've been here, hundreds, maybe close to 1,000 times, maybe more, probably. And every time I go onto that river, there's always something new. Yeah. There's always something different happening.
Speaking of something new, I did a quick list here. So all of the guests here are fairly well-traveled and have traveled Africa extensively, but we've racked up more than 10 different mammal species. That's before we go into birds and butterflies and reptiles and stuff. But 10 different mammal species, many of which are critically endangered. Like, there's not many places in the world where you can go and do that. Again, not having them, you know, controlled or in a sanctuary, completely wild, completely unhabituated outside of the Western Lowland gorillas. But everything else here is, you know, you work for it. Dil, just run us through like some of the critically endangered species that we've seen over the last couple of days.
Oh man, I mean, like the main one is always going to be forest elephant. You know, that is, it's, you know, the nice thing about this is because, you know, having been around, you start to see animals, and when you're going through Africa or anywhere in the world, but you see these animals, and if I go to Kenya, I'm seeing lions and I'm seeing elephants or savanna elephant, and I'm seeing, you know, wildebeest. If I go to South Africa, I'm seeing lions, I'm seeing savanna elephant, I'm seeing wildebeest. With Odzala, nothing is what you've seen before. Every single thing is completely adapted to this environment. I mean, like, species that are critically endangered, like I said, forest elephant. Forest elephant are the lifeblood of this forest, and so many people come and they're like, oh yeah, I love elephants. Yeah, but this is a forest elephant. This is a this is one of the newest elephants to science. This thing didn't even get a separate classification until 2021, until we finally found the distant relative, which was Palaeoloxodon, which is the largest elephant to have ever existed, you know. And then they were like, oh yeah, this is a separate species. And it's been, for their conservation, it's been devastating, because only now are we trying to catch up with them and being like, oh my God, you know, there's nothing left. You know, we were discussing this the other day, where there's probably in the 20,000s of them left. And if you take in consideration African Parks, the governing body of Odzala, reckons that we get about 10,000 forest elephants in Odzala every day.
Sure.
Into the 20,000s that exist. Yeah. That's over half the population. That's crazy, you know. So another species would also be the magnificent African grey parrots, which again is the most trafficked bird in the continent, where West Africa loses huge portions of its population every single year. So does Central Africa, all these places for the illegal pet trade. And places like Odzala provide this fortress for them.
Yeah,
it's two of the most important species we get out here. I mean, massively important for seed dispersal of numbers of different trees out here. You know, of course, your western lowland gorillas, the Ngaga area being one of the highest density of ape, not even just gorilla, ape on the planet, with the central chimpanzees that also feature into this area. You know, they are a handful of some of the species that are massively important, not only to, you know, us as guests or guides being in the area, but the entire environment cannot exist without species like this. You know, and even for different monkey species, we have the highest density of primate in the continent within Odzala, with over 14 different species of primate that make their home just around the area that we operate. Yeah. Who knows about further north in the park? I mean, we've even have records of lone mandrills starting to come over from Gabon. You know,
crazy.
It's you know, these things that's always surprises out here. Other species that we haven't seen, but you know, that are within the national park, like mythical creatures, or the three pangolin species, of course, which is the giant ground pangolin, black belly pangolin, white belly pangolins. We've got African golden cat, which is, you know, also just a mythical animal. You know, it's the opportunity to come out here and potentially encounter something that is so incredibly rare and special is really worth it, you know. Yeah. it's important, actually, that people come and see places like this, you know.
And I think you know, this is my fourth time here, and each time I've had incredible guides, and you guys have just maintained that standard. And you know, for anyone that's listening now, I'm sure they can hear your passion and the depth of the knowledge. What they won't see is just how well you guys work together, and how little ego is involved, and how you guys, along with the local trackers and everyone, get so excited, equally excited about some of the special things that we've seen. I remember our tracker's face when he saw the image that Christy shared of that gorilla with him, and his eyes lit up like that. And you know, that's very special. That tells you that you are dealing with people that are passionate. So you know, from my side, it's been an absolute privilege being in your guys' company and being guided by you across this landscape over the last couple of days, and really, really appreciate it. And yeah, so maybe parting comment, what would you say to someone who's looked at this and thought, oh, I'm not too sure if, you know, maybe a little bit too wild for me, I'm not sure if I should go? What would you say, Pedro?
Well, first of all, I think people should know that there's actually two Congos, right? So there's the Republic of Congo, where we are, and then there's DRC, Democratic Republic of Congo. We are far away from where the unrest is currently happening, unfortunately. It's like, I mean, to give a bit of a comparison, it's like if you talk about the war in Ukraine and you're standing in Paris, right?
Yeah.
Just to give people an idea. So now, nature-wise and wilderness-wise, I mean, if you're a true nature lover, this is the what's that word, Dylan? Pinnacle.
Yeah, the pinnacle. That's a good way of putting it.
You know, it's, this is where magic happens when it comes to nature. This is where you connect. Even if you don't see an animal, you just walk, navigate through these forests, and you know there's stuff happening. All these silent interactions, everything happens for a reason, you know. And even if you don't see it, you can feel it. And because of that mystery, you always want more. You always want more. And it's very, very difficult to get tired or be like, okay, I've done it all.
Yeah.
You know, there's always something new. I mean, there's species I've never seen, and I've been here for a decent amount of time now. I've never seen.
Yeah.
I've heard bird calling that I know what they are, but I haven't seen yet either, yeah. You know? And it's that kind of almost, I mean, it's so difficult to see some species and to have some encounters that it makes you even more humble, more accepting of things. It's not about us controlling nature. It's actually, like I said earlier, it's you take every opportunity nature and the forest gives you and you try and make the most out of it, you know? And that is incredible for me.
There's some deep life lesson in that as well. It really is a humbling experience to be out here. Thank you, guys. Talking of new experiences, I haven't jumped in this river yet for a swim, although we did kind of drift a little bit. So I'm going to go and do that. Thank you again for your time.
Thank you so much, Andrew.
Have a good one.
Cheers.